from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Happy Tuesday, Royals fans. We're going streaking. Royals, red hot at the right time, doing what they need to do. We'll get into it. Jacob Albrecht here, Tommy Kester alongside me. Jad Chambers back in studio. He's manning that IHOP hotline for you, which is brought to you by IHOP. Excited to bring you back all-you-can-eat pancakes through September 15th. That number is 869-1240. That's just one way to get in touch with the program. Easiest way if you're listening to us on KFH right now. You can also listen to us on the Odyssey app. You can listen anytime, by the way. If you miss any part of the show, you can do that. It's downloadable. It's basically a podcast for you. Jad does that, and we love having that capability. You can also watch us on 12 News Connected. We're excited about that. I'll get you a little inside announcement on that in just a second, but you can also watch us on X, YouTube, Facebook. You can leave us video comments that we can take up on the screen. Speaking of 12 News Connected, this weekend, you will see us on KWCH over the air as a part of the preseason football broadcast. We're going to put an hour of the show out on the air. We're really excited about that. So Friday, if you miss us, we'll put that in there. Be some cool crossover opportunities. So that'll come this weekend. We'll get you some more details as we get closer to it, times and things that you can watch us on the big screen. Pretty crazy. Show note today, Dan Israel was supposed to join us for the first time this year. He will not be able to do that. A little bit of a medical situation. Dan doesn't miss games. We hope he's back for Thursday's final preseason game, but we'll get Dan in next week. Our thoughts go out to Dan and get him a speedy recovery. So no Dan Israel today, but that's okay. We'll still take a look ahead a little bit to the Chiefs' final game. We got into it some yesterday. With the wide receivers, I want to go back to that. It's about the most interesting thing left in the preseason, what the Chiefs do at wide receiver. So we'll do that a little bit today as well. Take you around the sports world. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Man, I'm good. Good to be here today. There's a lot, of course, to get into as we get ready for the final Chiefs preseason game. Of course, as you mentioned, the Royals continue to stay hot. And so I'm looking forward to diving right in.
So if you see me panicking, if you're watching the video stream, so I'm in here and I come in and like, there's this really high pitched like squeal, Okay, so imagine, like, almost sounds like, you know, the sound like a circle saw makes, like a metal circle saw right before it goes down to cut, like that. And that's going off, and I'm like, is that my computer? Please tell me that's not my computer. I can't afford another computer. And I'm looking around, I'm like, what is going on here? It's the light fixture above me. Like, it sounded like something was about ready to explode, and I go to take that light out, and I mean, it is hot on fire. And I'm like, what is this? So hopefully my house doesn't burn down while we're live on the air here. But that was that I was just doing that right before we got on the air
It's funny how, like, you know, behind the scenes, and I know we've talked about it before, but usually that hour to hour and a half before our show starts, at least for me, is usually frantic. And I know it's frantic for you too. Like, so many different things going on. We're getting ready for the show. But then we've also got other things. Like, today was our son's first day of preschool. And so he's off to preschool for the first time. So we had to do pictures. And then I picked up donuts for the first day of preschool. Of course, it's pouring down rain as we're dropping him off. So just a lot going on this morning. And I'm glad we both made it here on time. I'm glad that your light didn't explode. I'm glad that we were able to get our son off to preschool. A lot going on behind the scenes.
We had our first day on the bus. So our son started kindergarten yesterday, and his sisters were excited. They're all in the same school for the first time, which is just, I don't know. Like, yesterday was weird in commercial breaks. I'm going out and I'm not, like, you know, he's not telling me some crazy story, because he hangs with me. Like, and all the kids have been this summer, but for the last 3 years, 2 years, he's here. Like, he's here. When you see him every once in a while, he'll kind of mosey in and so now he's gone. And, like, during these commercial breaks, I'm like, well, now what do I do? Like, I can't, like, I don't have, I go out and I'm, like, ready to check on him, and he's not there. But he had his first bus day today. So we kind of had the same thing. But Michelle, my wife, is at work. She's like, you better take pictures. I'm like, okay, that's the last thing I'm thinking. But okay, take pictures. And then it's raining, and we're, you know, it's.
My wife just texted me a few minutes ago, and, you know, and this is, you know, he's our oldest. So this is our first experience in sending a kid off to school and that sort of thing. We've never been in this world before. And so, you know, she and my wife is a planner and organized and wants to make sure that everything is all lined out. And so, you know, there's a car line at this preschool. You get in the line, you drop the kids off. You don't get out of the car. The teachers help the kids out, whatever.
Oh, no, no.
And, you know, so my wife was very much like, I hope it all goes okay. And I hope that our son is good and, you know, no issues. Apparently, so she texted me and just said that, you know, he basically was like, okay, mommy, you can leave now. Like, time for you to drive away. Like, I'm good, you know. And she was like, oh, I certainly didn't expect that to happen. Like, I thought maybe he'd be a little bit more like, no, don't go. But he was ready for her to leave.
Yeah, don't, you know, don't take that stuff for granted, because, my wife's a hot mess. Sending her last one off to kindergarten. It goes quick, as everybody always tells you, and then it's there and it's done, and you're like, holy crap, that went quick. They weren't lying. But anyway, we move on here as we're maybe a little sentimental and frantic. The Royals get another win last night. They do exactly what they need to do. And it was, in a lot of ways, I thought it was a really quality win. You had a game where Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, don't provide a ton offensively, a little bit, but not a ton. Salvador Perez was the big provider of the offense in this one. So that was good to see them still generate five runs without, you know, power essentially coming from Bobby Witt Jr. or Vinny Pasquantino, I thought. Seth Lugo, of course, gave you a really solid start, 8 strikeouts, 7 innings. He had that sort of bounce back we wanted to see out of him. Bubic was fine. He gave up the home run on the first pitch. I didn't think it was a bad pitch, so I think he continues to look pretty sharp. And then they get Schreiber back. And I had forgotten, honestly. Like, I'll be totally honest, I forgot all about John Schreiber. Like, totally slipped my mind that he was still a part of this. And it was interesting. They put him in the Sayz situation. I don't think you need to read anything into that. Urcic had pitched multiple innings the night before. But it was nice to see him get in there. You know, he's not lights out stuff, Tommy, but he's handy, certainly, and has been most of the year. So that was good to see. But all around, it was a good win, and it keeps the win streak going when they got to have it.
Yeah, it was really good. And I think that, you know, there's some credit that needs to be given to Paul DeJong. And he has been,
he's been good
since he was acquired by the Royals. It's a wonder what it'll do to go from the worst team in Major League Baseball to a team making a playoff push. And that's what happened with DeJong. He was traded from the White Sox to the Royals, and you know, he's been really good. He had a two-run home run last night, and he's added pop in the lineup that they had been lacking. I mean, let's just be real about that. They needed another bat in the lineup. And I know that at the trade deadline, the conventional wisdom was they need either, I mean, they need a leadoff hitter, but they also need an outfielder. And Paul DeJong isn't either one of those. He's not a leadoff hitter, really, and he's definitely not an outfielder. But he's been able to come in with that acquisition and provide a spark at times with the offense. And he's done this in a handful of games since he's come over to Kansas City, where, you know, he's been the key guy offensively. And I know that Salvador Perez added three RBIs in the game, but it was DeJong's two-run homer that, you know, really put the Royals over the top last night. So he's been good, and he's been somebody outside of that middle of the lineup that is highly touted and highly acclaimed. Where, you know, I think that, and I don't know if pitchers are really giving the rest of the Royals lineup as much credit as they should be, or as much respect as they should be, because they're so focused, as they should be, on Witt, Perez, and Pasquantino. But it's guys like Paul DeJong that last night came up big.
It's, you know, the other thing about DeJong is his power has been there, right? He hadn't hit for a ton of average, hadn't done it, but his power has been on display all year. He was traded with, what, 19 home runs when they got him?
So, but his batting average was down in the 20s, I think, when he got traded.
It was not good, but he's going to give them help, certainly. It's just been really, really fun to watch everybody pick it up a little bit. I mean, the Royals right now have the second best run differential in the American League, and they're winning while everyone else is losing. As we talked about this stretch and just how brutal it is, this is going as well as you could hope. All the contenders are losing games. The Royals don't look now are tied with the Twins. They are 4.5 games clear of Boston, 6.5 of Seattle. They're chasing down Baltimore / the Yankees now for the top wild card spot and in the division against Cleveland. So, you know, and again, is that going to hold true when they get to this next part of the schedule, which is probably the most difficult remaining for any team in Major League Baseball? The season as a whole tells us no, probably not. But at least it gives you the hope that they can, because if they're on, you know, they can beat anybody. We know that. I think, Tommy, if they can go 500 over that stretch, I don't know what everyone else is going to do. But if they can get through that stretch and go 500, they'll be fine. They'll be in the postseason, especially with this pad that's being created. And they get an opportunity two more times to go just a little bit further in that pad.
They built themselves a cushion. And I think in the next day or two, with the, you know, two remaining games in this series with the Angels, you know, with the way that they're playing right now, I don't have any doubt in my mind that they'll continue to pad that cushion a little bit more. And that's what you need when you're going into a stretch of baseball games like what the Royals are going to have the next 20 after they finish this Angels series. They need to have that cushion. They're 15 games over 500. And, you know, it was back before the All-Star break that they were 14, 15 games over 500. And there was a little bit of a stretch where it was like, okay, I don't really know what this is going to look like for the Royals. That, you know, really, even after, you know, they finished out that Minnesota series, or even before the finale, before they started this five-game winning streak, I mean, they were, what, 10 games over 500 at that point? And so I think the most crucial thing about this, and with the cushion that they're building, and you mentioned this, they're now battling with a couple of other teams for the top wild card spot and the division. So now it's again like a game of poker. You've got multiple outs, right? That's correct. What you look for in a game of poker with, you know, the hand that you're playing is, what kind of outs do I have? And for the Royals, for the longest time, it was the last wild card spot. That was it. That was their out. It was with the way that Cleveland was playing, with the way that Minnesota was coming on, the other teams in the American League wild card race, it was really the last wild card spot or bust for Kansas City. Now you've got multiple other opportunities to make it into the playoffs. And that's, I don't think that can be understated, because that, not that it takes the pressure off, because yeah, a late season collapse, nobody wants that. But at the same time, you can play a little bit more freely, because you know that you don't have to just get this one wild card spot. You're battling for the top wild card spot. There are three available for you to snag. Plus, oh, by the way, you're only 2.5 games back of the Guardians in the division. So it's a good position for the Royals to be in. I'd like to see that cushion be padded as much as possible by the time you get through this Angels series on Wednesday so they can start this really difficult stretch in a really good position.
And a couple other things on the schedule. It is 20. After you get through it, though, it's Pittsburgh, it's Detroit, it's San Francisco, it's Washington, and then you end with Atlanta. It does soften before the end of the season, right? But it is brutal here. 7 games against Cleveland in that stretch. That's a team they can pass or compete with. 3 against Minnesota. Now all of a sudden 3 in New York becomes more of a, oh man, that'll be tough. And like they could run them down, right? And then Houston and Philadelphia are the other two mixed in there. By the way, both of the Houston series is 4 on the road.
And Houston's the hottest team in baseball right now.
Hottest team in baseball.
You know, that's going to be a challenge for sure.
And you know, those are the series that you fear a little bit and that you just want to have pad for. And that's what they're building right now. And they're doing exactly what they need to do. Are we screaming from the rooftops in joy and excitement that they were able to beat Cincinnati and the Angels? I mean, yes, because you don't make it probably if you don't do those things. And they're doing what they have to do to get into the postseason. And so, great. Do it again. You know, you've got this series lines up and you're going to have to play Philadelphia, you know, without Reagans. Okay. And Reagans get the win tonight. And then you follow it up with the finale. It's great to see. And it's great to see the way they're doing it too. Like, that's what I mean about last night. Like it has felt like for a little while, it's been like all Bobby Witt, all Pasquantino. It was a little more spread out. It's nice to see them be able to win when those guys don't give you much offensively. I think that builds confidence a little bit, as good as the middle of the lineup has been, to be able to do that, to know that it doesn't have to just be those guys. And look, run differential right now in Major League Baseball, Tommy, the Royals have the second best run differential in baseball. And that is a big time indicator of how good a team is. Yet the metrics, at least these, you know, CBS metrics and other places, still are giving the Royals not a great chance. At least they're, you know, they're above 50% now. But I look at it, I don't know if it has to do with that schedule. I don't know if these metrics can't let go of preseason expectations. But I look at CBS Sports right now, and they have their projected win total by the analytics stuff they use at 86. 86 wins. They've got 70 right now. I mean, it would have to be an epic collapse.
I mean, they're still projecting. I mean, at that point, they're projecting a sub-500 record the rest of the way. And I know that the next 20 games are difficult for the Royals, but I don't see them finishing the season, you know, with only 16 wins in their remaining games.
It'd be like 16-22 or something.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay.
I mean, if they finished at 500, you know, then you would have 90 plus wins on the season. And it goes back to what we talked about a little bit yesterday, that there's not a dominant team in Major League Baseball. The team that's pacing, you know, the best right now, you know, is probably the Yankees or the Phillies, maybe one of those
the
two
Dodgers,
teams.
Dodgers, maybe 584.
But even then, the Dodgers right now. But even then, I mean, you're looking at a 95 win team.
They're four games
better than the Royals. And so you've got a bunch of teams that are going to be around that 90 win mark. So I think that, those analytics that you're looking at, and I've seen some of them too. I saw, I think it was an ESPN projection that had the Royals at like 75% chance to make the playoffs.
Oh, that's a little better.
Which is better, but I still thought it would be higher than that, or it should be higher than that. So again, I don't know what all, you know, that takes into account. I think another important thing to mention, you know, down the stretch, Seth Lugo didn't have a great game last night. He was okay. You know, he was fine. He walked too many batters.
He did.
You know, he pitched 7 innings, so he gave you 7 innings, and that was, I think, important, you know, for the bullpen. But he walked too many. He did strike out 8, gave up 2 earned runs, only 4 hits over those 7 innings. But going into the game last night, since the All-Star break, Lugo had been 2-3 with a 5.23 ERA. You know, and it was that kind of that drop-off that I was at least concerned about. really, it was kind of that start right before the All-Star break against the Red Sox when he kind of got lit up. It cost him the chance to start for the American League in the All-Star game. And he pitched that game, and I'm like, uh-oh. Like, are we starting to see a little bit of a comeback down to earth for Seth Lugo? And it really, you know, bar outside of a couple of starts since the All-Star break, hadn't been great for Lugo. Last night wasn't amazing, but he got through it. He pitched seven innings. I don't think that we're going to see probably Lugo pitch at the clip that we saw earlier in the season, but they've got, I think, now enough depth, and at least in the bullpen, they've got reinforcements where I don't know if you necessarily need Seth Lugo to be Superman the remaining starts that he has. Reagans has come on strong. Tonight, he'll be going for his sixth win in seven games. Brady Singer has looked pretty good as of late. Of course, Michael Wach is there. So, I mean, I don't necessarily think that Lugo has to fill that role that we saw him fill early in the season.
He definitely doesn't. None of the starters do yet. I completely agree. Let's take a break. And I agree with you. I want to talk about the starting rotation because I think it's such a different scenario for them now than it was early in the season. Ken's got a couple of comments. We'll get to those as well. We'll continue the Royals conversation here as we open Sports Daily on this Tuesday. It's a win streak. Things are looking good. It's baseball. We got this 3 weeks till we start the NFL. Let's go. Let's go. Royals, you'll hear them tonight, by the way, right here on KFH as well. Don't go away. We'll come back. We've got all kinds of stuff for you today. We're going to give away a prize. You've got lots of opportunities to win. By the way, mornings at KFH, staff enjoys some great coffee from Prairie Fire Coffee. Always appreciate them keeping us fueled up here at the Odyssey family. Let's take that break. We'll come back. More Royals talk when we return on Sports Daily. This baseball coverage on KFH is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily. Jake Balbrock, Tommy Caster here. We're talking Royals. We're talking baseball. A couple of video comments. Rick says FanGraphs has the Royals at a 79% chance to make the playoffs. Tommy, you pointed out another one. So maybe they are coming around in some places, but I do still see them not in good shape. I check their odds to make the playoffs. Vegas has them at minus 300, so Vegas certainly likes their chances. Ken brings up a Royals point on Bobby Witt Jr., Aaron Judge tied in WAR. I think one thing we've learned on that, Ken, is there are a lot of different places that have different numbers on the WAR. We talked about a while ago, what would it take for Bobby Witt Jr.? It'll take that and the Royals to make the playoffs. If the Royals make the playoffs, if Aaron Judge doesn't somehow set some sort of home run record or something crazy like that, I think Bobby Witt Jr. is the leader in the clubhouse. As long as the Royals reach the postseason and he just continues his pace, I think he'll get it. We saw another dazzling defensive play last night. We know those things. When the only flaw that people can find in your game is you get picked off too much, I think you're doing okay in the MVP race. So we'll see if he's able to hold it through. You brought up a good point before the break, Tommy, with the starting rotation and Seth Lugo not needing to do what he did early. And I do think he looked much sharper last night. I thought his stuff looked better. The walks are too many against the Angels for sure. I don't think they need any of these guys to be that guy necessarily, Tommy. They don't need the starting rotation to carry them the way that it did through a portion. I do think the bullpen is stronger post-trade deadline. I do think the lineup is much better than it was at one point, much more dynamic, much more complex. But the other thing is they're all sort of pitching in. And so we've seen Reagans sort of step up to that role his last two times out to stop losing streaks, basically. But that's where they'll need, like, if Lugo is presented with that same scenario where they really need a stopper or Waka, or that's where, like, you they've got to be able to step up and do that. And then it becomes about the postseason. And honestly, I think it's pretty clear how that would go. It would probably go Reagans, Lugo, Waka, Singer, I think, based on what we've seen. But they've got, again, like that's what potentially makes them so dangerous in the postseason. It won't really matter what order they go in. And it doesn't really matter what order they go in now. They're all, to me, all four of them. I think Reagan's you could put a tier ahead based on his last couple of starts, but they're all four kind of interchangeable in the sense that any four of them can shut the opposition down, right? Like they don't have to, like it felt like they did earlier this year.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about the run differential before the break and how it's the second best in Major League Baseball. Over the five-game span that the Royals have been on this streak, they've outscored their opponents 37-7. And, you know, it's a plus 30 run differential in the last five games. On average, they're outscoring their opponents by 6 runs in the last five games. That 37 from the bats is impressive, don't get me wrong. But what's even more impressive is the 7 runs
sure.
that the pitching staff has given up in the last five games. Now, part of that, yes, the bullpen for sure.
Playing crappy teams.
But yeah. from a starting pitching perspective, the starters have done what you've needed them to do the last turn through the rotation. And so there's not a whole lot more that I think you can ask out of the rotation as we move forward. I know that Lugo is giving up more runs than what we're comfortable with. I know that he's walking more batters than he did earlier in the season. The ERA, the whip, all higher than when he was basically dominant in the first half of the season. But Cole Reagans, I want to mention him because as Lugo has sort of cooled off a little bit, Reagans has really heated up. And so that's been, I think, something that we can take a look at and hang our hats on. Because we've expected Cole Reagans to be the ace of the rotation. I don't think that anybody expected Seth Lugo to be the ace of the rotation at the very beginning of the year. But Lugo filled in that role when Reagans was kind of up and down. And, you know, to Reagans' defense, he didn't get a ton of run support early in the season.
Right.
You know, so that didn't help his win-loss record. But he has gotten that run support as of late. His ERA continues to fall while Lugo is, again, kind of cooling off. And I think fatigue is a part of that. You know, Lugo is pitching more innings than he ever has in his career, you know, down the stretch where Reagans is younger. His arm is probably a little bit fresher. And so I think that, you know, that's definitely crucial for Kansas City that, you know, again, Lugo kind of can have that pressure taken off of his shoulders a little bit. Reagans, you know, with a couple more really solid and quality outings, could very easily get his ERA under 3. And, you know, so knowing that you've got him in your back pocket as your number 2 in the rotation should certainly make the Royals feel a whole lot better. But they've got the depth now in the rotation that they maybe didn't have at the beginning of the year. Now that you've got Lorenzen in the rotation, that can certainly help things out. And if they need to get into a position, especially, you know, in the 20-game stretch that they'll be playing against the really tough opponents, you don't necessarily, I don't think, have to run your rotation the way that you typically do. If a starter needs a day off or if you need to push back a start, make some changes, they've got the personnel, I think, to be able to do so.
And you saw Lugo push through yesterday, probably because they needed some rest in the bullpen for some players. The thing for me with Reagans is it's a lot of like demeanor and attitude almost. He hasn't been like lights out in these games that he is, you know, winning lately. Now it's kind of a bend but don't break, right? So he after the All-Star game, he's got a bunch of good starts. But in those starts, like he's had traffic and he's had quite a bit of traffic, quite frankly, but he gets through it. And his attitude is what I think sets him up and why you like him in the postseason. He just doesn't like whatever that MacGyver thing is where you just don't let one get away from you. He just doesn't ever seem to let one get away from him. You go back to late June against the Guardians. He had a bad start. He had a bad start in late June against the Guardians. And then after that, you got to go all the way back to May 11th. Don't listen to this. Maybe close your ears on this. The Angels rocked him and probably his worst start of the year. But like when you go back and you look and basically since April 25th, you've only got 2 dud starts. That's pretty good, right? That you'll live with that. There's two of them that you could just sort of throw in the trash can. He wasn't great against the Cubs, but he wasn't terrible. So that's where he has been. Like, Lugo has been more dominant in his good games, I think, than Reagan's. But Reagan's is developing this consistency to just sort of work through it and power through it. And that's important. And it's interesting to see that out of a guy that's so young that is also, I mean, that's the other thing. Every pitcher in the rotation right now is in uncharted territory, except for Lorenzen and Waka. Waka's been there over the course of his career, I guess, to be fair, just not lately. But you're looking at innings caps for the three quote unquote aces. Who knows what's going to happen? I don't think they know how their body's going to hold up, but I think we're seeing Reagan's really, you just sort of attitude-wise power through. They'll be fine. They just can't all collapse at once. They need one of them to step up and sort of pick up the others. The other thing that will help tremendously, of course, is if the offense just keeps it up a little bit. The bullpen would certainly help you. So if a starter does, and this is where the pressure that I mentioned right off the top of this segment, like the pressure feels so much less to me for them to be great than it did. For two reasons. Your lineup is far more potent than it was, and your bullpen's way better. I mean, don't you think the bullpen is like way better right now? We went through a large portion of the season, and it's like they don't have anybody to throw out there at this point. Now, you feel good about Ursig. I feel real good about Bubic still, so that's two. Okay, we'll see what Schreiber can give them as he comes back, and then maybe Harvey comes back. You went from zero to potentially three or four. I mean, that's a big difference at the end of games if your starting pitching takes a step back. And it was never reasonable to expect that starting pitching to keep the pace they were on at the beginning of the season. That was ridiculous. That was never going to happen. So it's all leveling out. This is all a part of what it takes to in a season to get to the postseason. And we need them to win these next two against the Angels because we're probably not going to be so joyous and pleasant for a couple of weeks after that.
Well, and I certainly think that it does, to an extent, take the monkey off Matt Quatrero's back. You know, when you actually know that there are some quality pitchers in your bullpen that you can go to, because before that, Quatrero kind of had a little bit of a quandary each time. It was, do I continue to just lean heavily on these starters and work them right to death? Or do I go to somebody that in the bullpen, you know, has good stuff, you know, and but maybe, you know, is not going to always be consistent and you're not going to be able to trust them. And so now that he's got a couple of go-to guys in the bullpen, that certainly should help make the in-game adjustments and decision-making that much easier and that much better for Matt Quatrero. I think that it comes down to, in the bullpen, it comes down to exactly how does it all line out. I think we know that Lucas Ursig, for the most part, will be the ninth inning guy. Although I know, obviously, last night he'd worked a bunch of innings, and so that wasn't the case. But he's the ninth inning guy. I know that they've tried and they continue to try Sam Long to get him right and get him going. I'm just not sure that he's going to be a late innings guy for you. I don't think he is anytime soon or at all. So at that point, you mentioned Bubic, but you know Harvey's injured. Can Schreiber fill that role? Do they feel comfortable with him? Can MacArthur figure out where his stuff is to where he doesn't have to be the guy, but he can be one of the guys because that might help him in his outings if he doesn't have that pressure on his shoulders either.
The Bubic-Ursig dynamic is interesting because both of those guys are fully capable and do pitch multiple innings frequently. It's not going to look traditional. I don't think there is a path to a clear-cut, you know, 2014-15 Royals shut you down after the sixth inning kind of bullpen where you know who's coming in each time. I don't think that's going to happen. So if that's not going to happen, then you just kind of need a collection of guys. I think they would like to let Ursig finish off games. The problem is each time, like, and we've seen this, like you get into these jams and it's like, well, who do we go to here? Gotta go to Ursig, stop the bleeding, right? And I have wondered for decades, Tommy, why bullpens don't work that way. I've always and you know, following the 14-15 Royals, following the 2010-11 Rangers, changed my tone on that because I do think if you have it, there is some advantage psychologically to handing innings off to guys. I mean, look at the Yankees dynasty. We saw that then too, right? But I also think, why wouldn't you just throw your best guy in the toughest situation? And that's what the Royals are doing with Urcig, and I love it for Urcig, right? Like, sorry, man, you're going to inherit every late inning mess we've got the rest of the way. Good luck. Do your best. And he just seems to thrive in it. And his stuff certainly plays. He's just electric right now. But the Royals go tonight. We'll get you more on that game. We'll look at the bets and all that in the second hour as we go through it. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll reopen the question we got into yesterday a little bit. I talked to more people about this just because I'm so curious about it. We were kicking it around the office a little bit. I don't know, Tommy. Like, I'm getting the impression you might be in the minority with what will happen with Kadarius Toney. No. I'm not saying like your opinion of what should happen. I hear and am seeing more people think he's still going to make it. Not that he should or shouldn't. That's not what I mean. I just think it's going to be like a photo finish on this decision. I don't think they know yet. We'll come back. We'll talk about it as we make our way through. Chiefs talk next on Sports Daily. Don't go away.
.975 and 1240 KFH.
Busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, Jad Chambers producing for us. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Go check out the club. Go check out the restaurant. Good food, weekly chef specials. They just sent an email about it. What do we got here? Let me just look. And just because this popped in. It's a Mexican street corn flatbread and baked cod with puttanesca sauce, wild rice and grilled asparagus. But Tommy, how do you do with the fine dining? I thoroughly embarrass my wife with the fine dining, and it's almost become a game that I like to play. A lot of it is real, though. Like, I've never seen do you know what puttanesca sauce is?
I just want to hear you keep saying puttanesca.
Puttanesca?
I don't know. Is that how you pronounce it?
I have no idea. I've never heard of it. Let's look up what puttanesca sauce is. So I do this to my wife when we go places, and partly it's real and partly because I know it really bothers her. It's tomatoes, olives, capers, anchovies, garlic, pepperoncino. But no, it's one. I don't know.
Is it pepperoncini?
No, it's not a pepperoncini. Oh, okay. Like a pepper. Unless I've always been saying that or spelling that wrong. So I have no idea what that is. It's got olives, so I'm out. Like, olives are the one food that I will eat or try and can do literally just about anything. Cannot do olives.
Any
that
kind of olive?
Thing.
Like black olive,
nothing.
Green olive?
Nope.
Like, no.
I can't get it down. If I'm at a restaurant and they literally bring me the wrong food, I'll just eat it and not say anything. I won't send stuff back unless it's like going to harm me. I can't, unless there's olives. Like, if there's olives, I'll try and like pick them out, but like, it will totally ruin the whole experience.
What do you do if you get like a supreme pizza that has black olives on it? You pick the olives off?
I can flick those off. Yeah, I can flick them off. I still don't like that it leaves that little bit of an aftertaste, but that's okay. Like, those flick off and are okay. Like, when I first started dating my wife, we went to an Asian food place and they brought me the wrong dish. And I was like, okay. But like, we were just kind of first started dating. I'm like, no big deal. Like, and I would never want that confrontation anyway. And so it was one of the hottest things I've ever eaten in my life. Like, dripping sweat. She's just kind of looking at me. And I finally told her, I'm like, they brought me the wrong thing. I don't know what this is, but it's really, really hot. But not olives. So I would be out on that. But, you know, all kinds of different stuff there. But I do. Like, I will now intentionally, when there are situations like that, go straight up hillbilly. Excuse me, ma'am, what's puttanesca sauce? Like, what is that? And just like point to it on the menu right in front of her. And she just like, she can't handle it.
You're probably that same guy that you go to a Mexican restaurant and you're, you know, ordering the quesadilla. Can I get one
quesadillas? I'm from Texas. So we got Mexican food. So it's good. But like Italian food or fine dining, I don't know what a lot of stuff is. And I have to ask her and she gets so annoyed with me every time. Like, you don't know what that is. Like, come on. And I'm like, no, I've never heard of it. I've never seen it. I don't know what it is. I've never heard of it.
I like fine dining. I can get into that every once in a while. Like, it's not a all the time thing. I know people that, you know, like, they're just, they want to go to, you know, whatever steakhouse or whatever fine dining restaurant all the time. I'm good, like, on a special occasion. Like, get me a high-end steak. You know, I'll be a fan of that for sure.
I like it. And I'm pretty adventurous as an eater, so I'll try anything. I just don't know what it is. And I very often just say, what's your favorite thing? I'll take that, like, to the waitress or waiter, and like, whatever you think. But I don't know what I'm getting a lot of the time. But baked cod sounds pretty good, actually. That's over at Crestview. Give them a call. Tell them we sent you. We will get you some Chiefs. We'll get into the Chiefs. I knew we weren't going to have enough time here to get into this. And I just scrolled through, and this is, and we'll sort of set this up. So we spent a lot of time yesterday on the wide receiver decision. Like, what do the Chiefs do? I don't have a strong take on what they'll do. I could easily make the case for Kadarius Toney staying or going. Tommy's pretty adamant that he thinks they will cut him. I just did a quick, like, Google news search, and I'm telling you, like, everybody's writing about it and everybody has a different take on it. Most people think he should be gone, but will he be gone? That's where you get mixed reviews, and that's sort of where I am with it. Like, should he be gone by this point? Yes. Will he be? I don't know. And that's the decision. So we'll get to that. We have some audio from Mitch Holthus about Xavier Worthy getting some reps. He is really opening eyes. So we'll have all that coming for you, and that'll be how we start off the next hour. But, you know, as we get ready to go into a final preseason game, Andy Reid talked a lot yesterday about roster decisions. And this is, you know, this is a fun game to watch. I kind of like the third and final preseason games because it is guys getting an opportunity to play for their jobs. And you never know when these players are going to step up into a bigger role. You hope that they don't, right? Because that would almost certainly mean somebody got hurt, but they're going to be there. And maybe that's where things are with Toney. Like, this is it, dude. Like, this is your last chance with us to do something. It is as interesting. I'm trying to think back, Tommy, to all the roster cut, like, this week of the season. And, like, I know that we pay way too much attention to that most of the time. I don't know that we've ever had one like Kadarius Toney, where it's like almost like a hot button issue with what to do with him. I can tell it gets you fired up. I don't care one way or the other. But we're all over the place with this one. So we'll talk about that. We'll get some of that audio from Mitch Holthus as well in the next hour. Chiefs talk as we start things up in hour number two. We'll have a giveaway for you as well in that hour. Don't go away. One in the books, one to go here. It's Sports Daily on a Tuesday.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily, and you can get in touch with us on the IHOP hotline, brought to you by IHOP, and it's all-you-can-eat pancakes deal through September 15th, 869-1240. If you want to chime in on this next topic, and it's what do the Chiefs do with the wide receiver room as cut days loom, Jacob Albrecht, Tommy Kaster here. Jad Chambers is on that IHOP hotline. You can let us know on our video streams, Facebook, YouTube X. You can leave your comments there with your thoughts on Toney and the decision the Chiefs need to make. 12 News Connected. Also watching us there. We appreciate it. Listening to us on KFH and the Odyssey app. We are growing. This would normally be the time around this time. We talked to Chiefs executive producer of the Radio Sports Network there, Dan Israel. He is rescheduling. We'll join him next week. Hopefully we get him on the call Thursday night for the game, which you'll hear over on KNSS. But we're going to talk Chiefs anyway. Let's start it with this. So Mitch Holthus came over to Steve and Ted this morning, as he does this time of year, and talked about one of the young receivers that will clearly be a starter in this offense, and that's first-round pick Xavier Worthy. Here's Mitch talking about those reps he's been getting with Hollywood Brown out.
We got Xavier Worthy touches, and Xavier had four touches for 63 yards, including a 22-yard tutty. But I caught up with Xavier, and one, he's excited. Two, he kind of gets it. we knew how he's the fastest guy ever in the NFL combine, but his acumen and his toughness is not as profound, but the Chiefs are finding out he has those attributes as well.
Man, it's fun. You know, football is my first love. I mean, shoot, it's nothing like coming out here and just learning something new and being out here with a contending team. I mean, it can't get no better.
How much do you feel like this was meant to be? How much does this offense fit you, what you do, and your versatility?
I mean, just like the guys that came before me, the Tyreek Hills, the Deshaun Jackson, that Andy Reid's coached. I mean, this offense kind of just fits me, and he's proven that he can get guys like me the ball and open field and even on the deep stuff.
Mature for a rookie to understand that he maybe is in a line of Deshaun Jackson, who flourished with the Eagles with Andy Reid in a similar role that Xavier has, and Tyreek Hill, whose career was made by Andy Reid in this offense.
The Deshaun Jackson comp is an interesting one. I hadn't thought about that, but that is it. That I had not made that connection. Of course, the history there with Andy Reid, he was as dynamic a playmaker for a little while as we had. That would be certainly something for Worthy, but the reality is Worthy is delivering at least up to this point on what the Chiefs hope for out of a first round pick. And they will get Hollywood Brown soon, and they will have Justin Watson basically to back up all three of Worthy, Rice, Brown. So, you know, and then Mecole Hardman will have his role. Those five are secure. Right. And then what happens is that is the topic of debate here over this week up to cut day is what do the Chiefs do? A, how many do they keep? Is it six or seven? And B, which ones will they keep if they do? Cornell Powell has made some big plays. Remigio feels more like a practice squad guy, but he's been pretty good. Kadarius Toney has, you know, this drafted pedigree and what they gave up to get him, but he has not been good. We have seen his upside in very limited flashes in a Super Bowl most recently, and then we saw the bottom end where he's not available and he makes mistakes and he does all that last year. So now the Chiefs have to make this decision, Tommy. The good news is it is such a different situation than it was last year where it was like, well, who's going to be able to play out of this group? Now it's almost, I don't want to call it an embarrassment of riches, but it's just such a different situation than it was a year ago. We're splitting hairs with a position that normally would never see the field anyway. So I think everything's okay, but it's fascinating with this particular player because of the highs and lows of his short Chiefs career, right? You've got massive contributions to a Super Bowl, to the Kelce play that wasn't, to a double penalty, like the highs and lows for this guy. And that's not just in Kansas City. It was in his time with New York too. Are staggering. And that's where I think the decision becomes so interesting. Are you even interested in the highs at this point? Because the lows are happening far more often. I don't know what they'll do. I really don't. And I think the reviews and the opinions on it are totally mixed. People think they're going to cut Clyde Edwards-Helaire and keep Toney. And I could see any scenario. I don't have a strong take on what they will do. What they should do is probably a little different for me, but what they will do, I got nothing. I have no idea.
Well, let's be honest. The reason why this is a hot button debate is anytime a former first round pick is in this kind of situation. And again, like I know the Chiefs didn't draft Kadarius Toney in the first round. The Giants did. So it's not the Chiefs that are on the hook, you know, for giving up that kind of draft capital, but they did trade, you know, a couple of draft picks to be able to bring in Kadarius Toney. It was a low risk move at the time for them to bring in Toney. But that's why Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a hot button topic. He was a former first round pick. That's why Felix Anudike-Uzomah has been kind of discussed as of recently because he was a former first round pick and how these guys are going to turn out in the NFL. I think with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, we all know at this point that, you know, he might be kind of a depth piece, whether it's for the Chiefs or for somebody else. I think they kind of realize that's a sunk cost. They drafted him long ago enough where, you know, he's not going to turn into magically this dominant running back in the NFL. He can be an okay depth piece. They signed him to a relatively inexpensive one-year deal. If they cut him, they cut him. Not the end of the world. Kadarius Toney is kind of the same way, although I would argue with Kadarius Toney, there may not be another player, this might be a bold statement, there might be another player in the National Football League that has such a high ceiling and such a low floor as Kadarius Toney. Like, it's such a wide gap between what everybody knows he can do from his athletic ability and the talent that he does inherently possess, all the way down to the very bottom with the mental mistakes, the penalties, the fact that he can't stay healthy, all of those different things. I don't know if there's another player in the NFL, and if there is, they're not coming to mind, that has such a wide gap between the top and the bottom. And again, I think that's why there's such a hot button topic when we're talking about what to do with him.
Rick, in all caps, says no chance they keep 7 wide receiver. I think the all caps translation is screaming it from the rooftops. I would tell you this, Rick, go back to the 53-man roster of the Super Bowl last year. Guess how many receivers the Chiefs carried on that roster? Okay, they carried 7.
They did.
So I it's definitely not out of the question for this team to carry 7 wide receivers. They did it in the Super Bowl. That is where this becomes interesting. I think, and this is what I said yesterday, if I'm trying to read it and give you a prediction, I think if they keep 7, Toney stays. What I can't figure out is if he's 6th or 7th in their minds, right? Like, if they keep 6, I don't know. If they keep 7, I think it's because they'll want to keep Toney. And that's a part of the interest of it. The other thing becomes, what is that? Like, if they keep Toney and 7 receivers, who doesn't make the team, right? Basically, like, who's that final cut that he's taking the roster spot of? And that's what, you know, that's where we probably overanalyze this just a little bit. Like, let's say it's, I don't know, Irv Smith or Carson Steele. Like, are those guys really going to be contributors in the regular season? I would say probably not. Not on a weekly basis.
On special teams, I think absolutely.
And they could be. Yeah, they sure could be on special teams.
And I think that also, you know, if you talk about Carson Steele, I mean, he can be an impact player on special teams. He can also provide some much-needed blocking help, and especially if there end up being deficiencies or injuries on the offensive line, which I know has been dealt with off and on, then having somebody like Carson Steele who can help block would definitely be, you know, something that would be valuable. I think Carson Steele at this point is a lock to make the roster.
I mean, he wasn't as dynamic a runner or anything in the second game. And that's what, you know, that's where I'm not going to pretend like I'm not going to sit here and give you like a hot take on Carson Steele. I don't know what they're planning to do in special teams. I have no idea. I would imagine that somebody they view being a big part of special teams is not in danger of being cut from the roster, right? So if they envision Carson Steele being a part of the special teams unit, they're not going to cut him. If they don't envision him being a part of the special teams unit, then they won't have a problem cutting him. And I don't know that they'll cut him. He's just an example, right, of guys I've seen listed. Irv Smith is another one. Irv Smith's not running down the field and making a tackle, I don't think, at this point in his career. Do they need an extra tight end? I don't know. Probably not as much as they have in the past.
They really like
Jared
Wiley. Better
receivers.
And they really like Noah Gray, obviously. I mean,
that's what I mean.
Like, those three guys, I just don't think they're going to keep 4 tight ends. I think
they're not.
They're
not. But these are the kinds of names, right, that are coming up in those final roster spot predictions. And if you're telling me, like, who would I rather have on the roster, Irv Smith or Kadarius Toney? I'm going to reluctantly tell you Kadarius Toney.
If you're giving me the option of just those two, without any other kind of context around who else is out there, that's what makes that you can't simplify it down to that level.
Okay, let me give you...
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Let me give you the more simple, and this is where we probably don't agree. Let's just look at the receivers, okay? Only the receivers.
Yeah.
And let's say it's seven, which again, they have a history of doing. We know who the top five are. So then everybody else basically gets grouped into a group of two. So you've got to have two of Justin Ross, Remigio, Powell, Sky Moore, and Kadarius Toney. Am I forgetting anybody? You got to take two for
those.
You
say Cornell Powell?
Yeah. So it's you've got to take. I am totally fine letting Powell go. I like that doesn't bother me at all. If it's and I can't believe it's here because it's just so wrong about Sky Moore. I would take Toney over Sky Moore at this point too. So then it becomes Remigio, who I think can easily go to the practice squad. Kadarius Toney's not going to the practice squad. He will be picked up by somebody if he's cut by the Chiefs.
Yeah.
So I think there is a tactical way to look at it. Which that would be one of them. Basically, at that point, you can keep Ross if you like Ross and Toney. I don't know who I'd rather have, Moore or Ross, but I would just, and this is what we got into yesterday, and I know we don't agree on this. And again, I'm not that passionate about it. I'm just like, it's because of that wide range of outcomes with Toney that I would be, as a seventh receiver, that hurts me zilch. If we're just talking receivers, I would find a place for him just in case.
I don't know how you can say he hurts you zilch, even as the seventh
receiver.
Because
he'll never play.
That's not true, though. If he's on the roster, he will get on the field, even if it's in a limited capacity, even if it's a handful of snaps a game, even if it's only on special teams, he will find the field if he's healthy. Now, if he's injured, which he's been injured all the time, then he's taking up a roster spot for nothing, for no good reason.
They'll
put him on the IL, but IR. But I mean, at that point, yeah, like that's the only time. Like I think I even said this last year. This was before the heroics in the Super Bowl. I would have rather had an injured Kadarius Toney not play than a healthy Kadarius Toney on the field, right? Because of all the different things that he was doing to hurt the Chiefs. And, you know, I think that hindsight is 20/20, and you can put on rose-colored glasses and you can say, well, look at what he did in the Super Bowl, and that's great. Thank you for doing that, Kadarius Toney. I said that yesterday, but I don't want to take the risk. I don't need to take the risk moving forward because it was different a year ago when out of necessity they had to continue having him on the team. The wide receiver room is better this year, at least on paper. I think in a lot of different ways, it's better than it was a year ago. So you don't have to take
the
risk.
Same,
you don't have to take the risk in having Kadarius Toney on the field this year like you had to a year ago. I think he's, and this is, I think, where you and I really differ on this. I don't even think it's that big of a question. I don't think it's that big of a debate. I think he's gone. I think he should be gone. I think he's going to be cut. The only, in my mind, and I've been thinking about this a lot, the only potential like nugget of a saving grace that could keep Kadarius Toney maybe on the roster is the fact that the Chiefs probably know that at this point in the preseason, they can't trade him. Nobody's going to give you anything for him. So really your only option, if you want to get rid of him, is to cut him, put him on waivers, and somebody else will pick him up. You're not going to get any kind of return for him because teams know that. Like, teams know if you're going to be shopping him, well, I could just wait a week and I could pick him up on waivers, and it's no big deal. I don't have to give anything up. So if the Chiefs are like, well, we'd really like to get something out of him, we, you know, did give up, you know, a little bit of draft capital to get him from the Giants, then potentially maybe they say, well, I guess maybe we'll hang on to him so we don't just like get nothing out of it. So I don't know. I'm of the camp and of the belief that you brought him in. The ceiling was high. The talent was there. Made a lot of mistakes. Was injured a lot. There were off the field issues and that sort of thing with Tony. He helped you in the Super Bowl. So in my mind, he did what you needed him to do.
Absolutely.
When you signed him. There is
and
nothing,
they won the Super Bowl last year despite his gaps.
And there is nothing further that he needs to do for this team. There's no other reason to keep him on the roster. And I believe that there are better options. Even if they're going to carry seven wide receivers, there are better options than Kadarius Toney to even be the seventh receiver on the depth chart.
I don't think the decision will have anything to do with the question of like a wasted investment. I know a lot of people think the Chiefs are like, well, we spent so much to get him. No, he's delivered on what you've needed to judge. You've won the last two Super Bowls. Who cares? Right? Like that's not relevant to me in this part. I don't think Brett Veach is sitting there thinking, God, we traded 2 years ago. You won two Super Bowls since making that move. You don't need any justification as far as that goes. I think it's simply what he could give the offense. I would say this, if he has another performance like he did in week two in this preseason game, he's probably going to be gone. If he has another bad week of practice in which he was called out for, he will be gone. But if he comes out in week three and formationally they can do a couple of things with him and he delivers on that and does what he's supposed to do, I think that would tell us two things. A, they still would like to keep that wrinkle in their playbook. And B, if he delivers on that, they'll probably keep him. That's as strong a guess as I can make at this point. And again, that's only guessing if they keep seven, right? If they don't keep seven, then my hands are totally up in the air. I don't know who they would prefer out of that. I don't think they're as in love with Justin Ross as people think they are. It probably at that point comes down to Sky Moore or Kadarius Toney and which one of those guys. And then, yes, I would say special teams probably has a lot to do with it. And I have heard, I think it was Brandon Zenner maybe who was telling me this yesterday, they have liked Sky Moore in special teams. Brandon covers the Chiefs every week for us at KWCH and 12 News. So he's far more locked into like all these tiny little intricacies that comes out of camp and stuff because he's going to use that in his coverage throughout the year. So I think it was him that told me that. That would be something if they keep six. If they keep six, I don't know that I think he'll make it. If they keep seven, though, I think he'll be the reason they keep seven. 869-1240, what do you think on it? We've spent far too much time on that, but it is interesting, and so I can't help it. Another NFL story that has come to light this morning that I do think is relevant to Chiefs fans, Justin Herbert's back already from plantar fasciitis, which means he should be ready to go to the start of the season. So let's look at the division for this. We brought this up just briefly yesterday with the Gardner Minshew announcement. What about the rest of the division? Nobody's going to sit here and tell you anybody is going to challenge the Chiefs in the AFC West. If they do at this point, they're kind of crazy. But what is the order of things after Kansas City? We'll get into that as we make our way through. Let's set up our giveaway here for some HTO. You can get your hands on a free iced tea and a free coffee, iced or hot, featuring Free Reign Coffee. More than 20 flavors of the tea to choose from. All kinds of great snacks. Here you go to win both of those iced tea and coffee. All you got to do is text the keyword tea, T-E-A, to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. These are good for the East Wichita, the West Wichita, or the Derby location. Good luck. Again, that's T to 20357. We'll be back. What about the rest of the AFC West? That's where we head next on Sports Daily.
.75 and 1240 KFH.
Welcome back into Sports Daily, everybody. Glad to be here with you. Jacob Albrock, Tom McCaster. Royals baseball available for free here on KFH and on the Odyssey app. Tune into KFH tonight at 7 for Royals Angels, or simply download the Odyssey app and search for KFH. I say it all the time. That's when I mow the yard. I love listening to the Royals on the Odyssey app when I mow the yard. Tommy, Rick, still chiming in. Don't assume Mecole Hardman will make the roster. Chiefs podcast he listens to. Don't think about. I think this is where it gets so confusing. I think the opinions of the Chiefs beats are very mixed. There are people that don't think Clyde Edwards-Helaire will make it. Clearly somebody that follows it doesn't think Mecole Hardman will make it. I think Hardman will make it because I think they trust him. And the return game becomes a big factor in all this. Like, of those groups, like, who do you want to return? That's where I've heard Sky Moore has made some waves potentially as a return man. That Kadarius Toney obviously can do that too. Mecole Hardman, I think, is on the roster strictly to do that. So maybe if they don't think he's done a good enough job, they will let him go. I don't know. I mean, this is far more care and attention than I ever pay to this sort of thing. Because I think it's interesting this year at that specific position, but we'll see when the dust settles. I mean, more than anything else. And this third preseason game is probably going to be a big opportunity for these guys to do what they need to do. I don't think we'll see Justin Herbert play in the preseason game, but it sounds like he's back at practice. That is interesting. I have told you, Tommy, that I think it's going to work with Harbaugh. I think the Harbaugh thing will work for the Chargers. I hope, because I like to see great quarterback play, that Herbert is at full strength and ready to roll. Where do they stack up to you? Bo Nix has made some noise. The Raiders, I do think, are a decent roster, but inadequate a little bit at quarterback. I would say that I think it will go probably Chiefs, Chargers, Raiders, Broncos. But you could honestly make a case to mix up those other three in any order you want. And I'm not going to tell you you're crazy.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the Chargers have the best chance outside of the Chiefs. Obviously, the Chiefs will be the favorite in the division. But outside of the Chiefs, I think the Chargers are probably the next best team. Really, my only question, well, I guess I have two questions about the Chargers. Number one, health and Justin Herbert specifically, and is, you know, that plantar fasciitis that he's been dealing with something that will linger and could carry on into the regular season? Because I know those things, you know, don't just go away. So what does that look like? Will that, you know, will that affect him in a negative way this season? That's question number one. Question number two is, how much time, if any, will it take for the Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers marriage to really mature and get to a point to where, you know, there aren't those growing pains? Because every coach that comes into a new team has that. I think the hope for Harbaugh and the Chargers from their fan base and everybody involved with that team is that any of those, you know, growing pains that might be there have been taken care of in the preseason and during OTAs. But there could, that could always linger into the regular season. What will that look like? Will they have any kind of, you know, growing pains that they have to work their way through as we start the Jim Harbaugh era with the Chargers? My place that I would disagree with you in the division is, and I said this yesterday, I think Denver is better than Vegas. I think that Denver will be the third best team. And then I think that the Raiders will probably finish last in the division. And that's simply because, you know, they're trotting out their Gardner Minshew, who is, I guess, serviceable at best, but they don't have Josh Jacobs. Their only receiver of note really is Davante Adams. I know that there's some young talent, you know, there, but really, I just don't think that they've got the personnel to be able to compete.
Well, okay, so let's look at this a couple of different ways. If it's only Davante Adams, it's only Courtland Sutton in Denver, who would you rather have, Davante Adams or Courtland Sutton? They're both good, but I'd still give the nod to Davante Adams at
this
point.
But who's going to be throwing him the ball? And I like that, you know, and Bo Nix is unproven for sure. But he has shown some sparks in the preseason where that gives you a little bit of hope. Gardner Minshew, they gave him the job because really it was like, I think Antonio Pierce caught between a rock and a hard place. Like, do I go Gardner Minshew or do I go Aiden O'Connell? Neither one is a really great option. And I don't think either one really inspires confidence.
I think you're being a little bit unfair to Gardner Minshew, who's earned the opportunity to do what he's done. I mean, his career numbers are good. I mean, they're certainly better than a lot of starting quarterbacks that get trotted out there in the NFL. Gardner Minshew isn't some castaway. Like, he was brought in there to potentially be their starter. I think there's absolutely a world where Bo Nix is not any better or is worse than Gardner Minshew. I just think the Raiders, almost everywhere else on the roster, are better. The Chargers get interesting to me because who have been the top three playmakers for the Chargers for the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, right?
They're gone. Keenan Allen,
Mike Williams, and Austin Eckler.
They're all gone.
And they're replaced by J.K. Dobbins, essentially nobody at wide receiver. Like Josh Palmer is going to slide up from being their third receiver to their number one. Quentin Johnston, who I was way wrong about, it would appear in the draft. I loved him coming out of TCU. He's been not good at all.
I'm willing to give Johnston the benefit of the doubt a little bit. I mean,
I've heard bad reviews on
him. He was behind.
And I loved him.
He was behind Williams and Allen on the depth chart last year. I think, in my opinion, I think the jury is still out on Johnston.
No Gerald Everett, by the way. Yeah. Like, they don't have a lot on that roster
offensively. They did draft Ladd McConkey, and I think that they feel pretty good about him. They signed DJ Chark, which, you know, he can give you a little bit here and there.
He's just old.
He's just but what I do like about the Chargers is that even though the roster overall, pretty much outside of Justin Herbert, looks different, especially offensively, a lot of the strategy that the Chargers have implemented over the last few years is bring in really big name players, you know, that have really like strong name recognition, and then not have them perform up to the expectations that you thought that they would bring to the table. That's, you know, really like more than anything, I think is kind of what has hurt them, and injuries also over the last few years. Jim Harbaugh, it's more like, I'm going to build a team. I don't really care about their name recognition. I just want to build a team that's going to be successful.
They're just going to run the crap out of the ball is what they're going to do, right? They brought in J.K. Dobbins as like a big-time upside guy who I like. It's just been he's been snake-bitten by injury. The Gus bus, they got Gus Edwards in there now, and they drafted a young player. I think it's Vidal. And they're just going to run it a ton, which is interesting because, you know, we've seen Herbert be this gunslinger. I don't think he's going to do that at all this year. I think they're going to pick their spots. They're going to run the ball. They're going to go old school. And Harbaugh's been really successful at doing this for a long time, and it's probably going to work for them. But, you know, they have lost a ton on that outfit. I could see any order of the rest of the division, and I'd be like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But I could, you know, but for good and bad, right? Could the Broncos way overachieve? Sure. Way overachieving, though, and being better than the Raiders and the Chargers. Yeah, like, let's keep that in context. They're not making the playoffs this year. I don't see a path for any of these three teams to be in the postseason. Maybe in a best-case scenario for the Chargers, maybe. That's just a prediction on Harbaugh and Herbert and how good they both are.
But also, don't forget that the Chargers' defense have a couple of players that can't be game breakers. Joey Bosa obviously is still there. Khalil Mack, you know, is on that defense. And I don't know. I mean, depending on health and all of that, is there a better 1-2 punch in the NFL defensively than Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack, you know, on that same defense? They've also got Denzel Perryman, you know, a couple of other, you know, big name players like Asante Samuel. There are some other guys there. They're linebackers overall, maybe at least by name only, the most loaded linebacker core in the NFL. Whether or not they actually deliver on that, I think, is up in the air. But as far as like just notoriety, they should be at least stacked at linebacker at the very least.
Yeah, it's a tough one to predict. When you look around the AFC too, like it feels a little more, we'll call it predictable, I guess. That's the division to me that is just absolutely up in the air, have, you know, outside of the Chiefs, but, you know, Jets, Dolphins, Bills, Patriots. We know three of those teams are probably going to be really good, right? And the Patriots will be the worst of it. The order of those three, I think they probably are all three playoff teams. The AFC North, we talked about this for a second yesterday. Really, I mean, look, you go into the AFC, there is one, I'll call it for me, because I'm a little more bullish on the Raiders than you. I think there are two quote unquote bad teams in the AFC, and that's it. New England and Denver. Like even if you would say you'd put the Raiders there, that's only three. You look around the rest, like every single other team could make the playoffs. Tennessee is probably on the bottom end of that, but you look around and because Tennessee's done a lot to improve their offense. Right around Will Levis. I think I'm not going to write them off yet until we see some of this play out. But Jags, Texans, Colts, all to me are for sure playoff contenders. And I'm going to keep Tennessee there for a minute. Baltimore, Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh clearly are. And then three out of the four teams in the AFCs. That's pretty wild. I mean, you've got the Chiefs, I would say, head and shoulders. Well, not that's not true. You got the Chiefs and the Ravens, I would say, quite a bit ahead of everybody at this point. But, man, it's going to be a hot mess. And playing games in the AFC is going to be tough almost every single week. And for the Chiefs, even the easy games, they become division games, which can, you know, get a little different sort of challenging.
I don't know. There's one player, as I'm looking at the Raiders proposed or depth chart that they may end up going with, at least their current depth chart as of right now. There's one player in that depth chart that inspires confidence in me that I can get excited about, and that's Max Crosby. That's literally it. As I'm looking through their depth chart, as somebody who can be a game breaker for them. I don't even put Davante Adams on that list because he needs somebody to throw him the ball, and Gardner Minshew or Aiden O'Connell, that doesn't really do it for me. Zamir White had moments last year. That was good. He could be the next guy that could, you know, potentially step up. But behind him, they signed Alexander Mattison. He's not going to do anything for you. And the rest of the wide receivers are, you know, kind of iffy, you know, at best. They did bring in Brock Bowers, and maybe he can be somebody at tight end that can.
And I like Mayer at tight end. I think they got
They've got a good tight end room, but there's nobody that really gets me super overly excited about what the Raiders can do game in and game out, other than Max Crosby.
Who threw Davante Adams the ball last year?
Well, Aiden O'Connell did for the majority of the season.
He had 100 grabs last year.
Yeah, because they didn't have anybody else. Down, they didn't have anybody.
But why can't that replicate with, I would say, a better quarterback? The Raiders were 8-9 last year, and they got better at quarterback. That's what it is for me. And we'll see what Brock Bowers does.
They got better at quarterback, but it's a low bar, and it's a very slight upgrade, I think, probably from Aiden O'Connell to Gardner Minshew.
But don't misunderstand what I'm saying with the Raiders. I'm just saying they could replicate an 8-9 record.
Yeah, sure.
I think they got better on the roster than they were a year ago, for sure. So replicating an 8-9 roster, I wouldn't call an 8-9 team, by the way, a bad team, right? I think when you look at a mediocre team,
does that work? Can we call them mediocre team?
I absolutely think they're a mediocre team. I'm not saying I think they're good. I just don't think they're terrible. I think they're mediocre. Whereas I think Denver might end up still being bad. We'll see on that. We'll see if Sean Payton can get it's going to depend on Bo Nix. But when you look at the NFC by comparison, I'll tell you right now, the Giants are going to stink, right? Minnesota is probably not going to stink. They'll probably be okay. But we'll have the Giants stink, the Saints. Maybe I'm being unfair to the Saints because they were 9-8 a year ago with basically the same roster. But the Panthers probably won't be any good. Arizona, not going to be any good. I don't know how Seattle can keep holding it up. I mean, this is the NFL. It's totally unpredictable. The point of all of this is it's harder for me now to go find the teams that we think are going to be really, really bad, right? Carolina, I think, is safe to say it. I don't even know if I can put Carolina and New England and the Giants. Is that three? Are those three teams we can say will be really bad? But like people are saying, oh, Minnesota's going to pick at the top of the draft now without J.J. McCarthy. I'm like, guys, J.J. McCarthy wasn't going to start for them probably until halfway through the season anyway. Like how much of a needle mover is that for a guy that was only going to probably start half the games for this team this year? It's hard for me to go find bad teams in the league, and it goes back to the AFC West. I think it's a perfect representation of that. Like, it's really hard to predict this league. And other than those three teams, I mean, New England, I don't see a path. The Giants, I don't see a path for sure. The Giants may be the most obvious. I mean, even with the Panthers, you could say, oh, they added Deontay Johnson and Bryce Young now in year two. Okay, you could start to maybe see something for the Panthers, get a little better. There's not much out there when you look, which is what part of what makes the NFL so great.
I actually do see a path for the Patriots, and really it's going to predicate on how long of a leash they give Drake May. In my estimation, the way that they should do things, the way that Jerod Mayo should come out, is just like come out swinging. Like, let Drake May be that gunslinger from day one. What do you have to lose?
I agree.
I know they haven't made an official decision yet on who their starting quarterback is going to be. At least they haven't released that yet, but it's Jacoby Brissett is not going to do anything for you.
He's looked terrible.
And so what else do you have to lose other than just letting the guy that you drafted in the first round go out there and just like let it all hang out and see what happens?
You just
gotta
protect him.
And if he's got,
protect him a
if he's
bit.
Got, you know, a little bit of success in him, then it, you know, you're basically jumping out from day one to basically say, guys, we have nothing to lose at this point. Let's just go out there and run wild. That could end up being successful for the Patriots. And then keep in mind, Jerod Mayo has been one of the better defensive minds in the NFL for a long time. And so I do think that defense will be improved from a year ago. So I see a path. I think it's unlikely for the Patriots, but I think there is somewhat of a path, at least for them to have a certain level of success this upcoming season.
I think it's the most unlikely for them. But here's the other thing. As fun as it is to say it's really hard to find bad teams, all those teams that someone, it is so easy to cross off the list teams that have a chance to win a Super Bowl, right? Like that's where the NFL is a little strange. Like you can cross at least half the league off right now has been like, yeah, they got no shot to win a Super Bowl. That's where it gets a little tricky. The Chiefs, of course, sit at the top of that mountain. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get you primed up and ready for the Royals tonight. We'll look at some of the bets out there and available for you. That's all coming in our last full segment, Sports Daily. Don't go away.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster with you, taking you through our last full segment here. Let's talk about the Royals and Angels tonight. You'll hear it right here on KFH. 7:10 first pitch, 7 o'clock pregame coverage here on KFH. Royals are favorites, as you would imagine. The run line, Tommy, you can get even money tonight, so a little more favorable than last night. They're going up against a pretty good starting pitcher. The over-under streak was not in play last night. They didn't get over, right? It was under by a half run, wasn't it, at 8.5?
Yeah, I think
yesterday?
It was at 8.5, and they finished at 8. So that breaks that streak as far as the over is concerned.
The Bobby Witt Jr. over bases also did not get there, but the other one we liked, which was Seth Lugo over total outs recorded, did get over. Cole Reagans has that same number tonight. He needs to pitch at least 6, 12, 18. He needs to pitch 6 innings to get there. But it's juiced way down. But if you're looking for like a little parlay or something, you could take your chances there with Reagans against the Angels. Offense has not been very good this year, so probably like that a little bit. I don't know what I probably could just put that. Let's see what that does on a Royals money line and a Reagans to get through six innings. You'd get plus 154. That's not too bad. I might look at something like that because I do think taking the Royals on the run line is still in play here. Very much so to win by two runs or more, just because the Angels have had such a hard time scoring runs.
You know, I think that, you know, now that that over-under streak has been broken, I think tonight would be a decent opportunity to look at the under, actually, because Cole Reagans...
I agree. I would agree with that.
Cole Reagans is obviously pitching well. His ERA is approaching three, and he's, you know, going for six wins in his last seven starts. On the flip side, Tyler Anderson is one of the few bright spots that the Angels have right now pitching. And so I don't know. I think that knowing that we might be looking at a little bit more of a low scoring game and a game that I'm really glad that Seth Lugo ate up as many innings as he did last night, because I do think that especially in the late innings, the last couple of innings, the Kansas City bullpen is going to need to be called upon.
One little trap on Reagans, because Urcig is rested, they may, like, if Reagans like ran into trouble in, and I don't think they would do it in the fifth, so I think you'd still be safe there. I don't think they're putting him in. Reagans to get to six feels pretty good, because even if with Urcig rested, Reagans is in trouble, I'm not sure they're going to go to Urcig that early. And Bubich, the other guy who does that a lot, did pitch last night, so that's another way to look at it. But look, it low scoring feels right to me too tonight. I would like to see the offense, you know, remember when we were, and it wasn't that long ago that it just felt like this was going to be a streaky offense and you kind of had to ride the waves. It's been a while since it's felt that way to me now. And I think that's probably mostly, you know, due to Vinny Pasquantino. I think his consistency and his surge has kind of helped level things out a great deal. So I'm a little bit less worried about that. We didn't talk about this, about last night's game. Were you surprised at all? Because I was, that Dairon Blanco was on the bench last night.
With the hot hand that he's had lately? Yeah, I was a little bit.
I was too. I don't know why they won't play him every day. I don't know what the resistance on that is.
He provides you, though, you know, so much pop that whether or not he's in the starting lineup or they're throwing him in there as a pinch hitter or whatever, like he can give you.
That's true. And a pinch runner too. Pinch runner. Gives you both.
Yeah. He can give you, you know, a little bit of a spark when needed. But I'm with you. I'd love to see him, you know, in the starting lineup moving forward, at least until he, you know, gives you a reason not to.
Well, it's not even, I'm okay with that part of it where I wasn't at one point because you needed to do anything. It's more about just kind of trying to like continue to utilize a hot streak, basically. Like if he's on a hot streak, let's get him some ABs.
Yeah.
But he absolutely does provide them versatility. You know, that's something too. And I don't know that Piccolo's gotten enough credit for this with the trade deadline. What Quatrero can do throughout the course of a game now is pretty awesome, right? Between DeJong, Massey, Hampson, Blanco, like all these guys that they can sort of mix and match down the stretch of a game and utilize them. Frazier has been nails as a pinch hitter this year, is pretty interesting. And it and quite frankly, I think it's been a contributor to the recent good play. Like them being able to do that has absolutely become a weapon for this team. And as much as I think the bullpen got significantly better, and I like the Lorenzen trade, which are the things that I focus far more on with Piccolo, I think he's got to be the executive of the year, doesn't he? After the offseason,
I think so.
Round, like I can't think of one off the top of my head. The signings that they made in the offseason with between Waka and Lugo, plus the additions they were able to make with such limited resources at the deadline, the turnaround makes it pretty obvious to me for executive of the year. But it's got to be, man, he is on fire right now. And if he can kick, I don't want to look past this year, but man, if he could do that into this offseason again and push a couple more right buttons, that's why I think this window has widened a little bit. But yeah, that versatility in the lineup, but we don't have it yet. We usually get that lineup a little bit later, but I want to see if Blanco gets put back in there My guess is he's not going to, but I wish he would. I wish he would. I gravitate to him. I think he's an exciting. It's kind of like Firmino. It's a little bit, you know, it's kind of like Freddie Firmino and how I've gravitated to him. They're just exciting players is all it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are so many different options and Cutrero can press different buttons. And it's interesting because it's been a mindset shift for me because I like my thing. I like everything in a box, you know, and I like to color inside the lines. So it's like you need a set leadoff hitter. You need your set lineup. You need to know who's going to be playing what position, who your bench players are, all of that. That's not outside of probably, what, five or six players? Yeah. That's not really the case. Like, Cutrero can kind of mix and match depending on the situation, who you're playing, who's pitching against you, whether they're right-handed or left-handed. A bunch of different factors will come into play. And the fact that he's been able, it hasn't always been perfect, but the fact that he's been able, for the most part, to press the right buttons and build the lineup in the ways that he thinks is, you know, going to work out the best. You know, you mentioned Piccolo as executive of the year. I think Cutrero's got to be manager of the year.
You're right. You're right. I think he deserves more credit than he probably gets too, because sometimes it's easy for a manager when you can just pencil in the same thing every day.
Look at the Phillies lineup, for example.
Because I would like that. Yeah. I would like that too, but they don't have it.
Phillies lineup, you kind of just set it and forget it for the most part. There are some changes, but I don't know if there's another team in Major League Baseball that has as many moving parts from one game to the next with their lineup and the way they play their guys more so than the Royals do.
Yeah, there may be some that have not that have done it probably as well. All right, we'll come back. We'll tell you how to watch and listen to everything the rest of the day and get you set up for it when we wrap up Sports Daily right after this.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.